IELTS Listening Practice Tests by IELTS Success Group. Copyright 2021. This material may not be copied. IELTS Listening Practice Test 1. Section 1.
Hi, Professor Emerson. I know you're busy, but could I speak with you for a couple of seconds?
No problem. Have a seat.
The thing is, you know, I was absent 3 weeks ago, and I was wondering if I missed anything important.
Yes, of course. All the information conveyed in class is important. And to be honest, I'm quite surprised that you're asking about it only now.
Sorry, I'm not following you.
What I'm getting at is, I'm sure you remember that at the beginning of each semester when I mentioned the policy on absences, I said then that a student needed to see me as soon as possible following an absence.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. I just realized today, though, when you were talking about the test that's coming up next week, I was worried about the session I missed, in case any of that information is on the exam.
I can't reveal any information about what's going to be covered on the end of semester test, but I can tell you that it's a comprehensive test. Well, 3 weeks have passed since you missed the class. That's quite a long time, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm a little bit embarrassed about it. That's why I hesitated to see you about the problem. Actually, I've just been diagnosed with diabetes. I've kind of been struggling the past couple of weeks to pay attention in class, because my medical condition makes me feel quite tired.
Well, when a student has a medical condition, it is considered to be an extenuating circumstance, so we can excuse your absence. We'll also have to give you more leeway about your homework, and so on.
Oh, that's great news, because, as I said, I've been finding it really difficult to concentrate.
Well, as you know, I usually tell students to copy the lecture notes from a friend. But in your case, why don't I just give you a copy of my PowerPoint slides for the lecture that you missed? Would that be helpful?
That would be great. Will any of the information from that lecture be on the test?
As I said, I really can't give precise details about the final exam. But I would emphasize again that it is a comprehensive test. So anything we have talked about in class can be included on the final exam.
Okay, so I'll just review everything for the final test. Did I miss any homework?
Actually, there was a 300-word personal response piece that's due next Tuesday. But if you can give me a note from your doctor as evidence of your medical condition, I can give you a 2-week extension.
No problem. I can bring the doctor's note to our next class. Is that okay?
That would be fine. Now, here are the copies of the PowerPoint slides. Is there anything else I can help you with?
No, that's all. Thanks so much for your help.
No problem at all. See you in class next week.
That is the end of Section 1. Section 2.
Hi, I was wondering if you could help me.
Well, I hope so. Have you got a question?
Yeah, well, a problem is more like it.
Oh, that doesn't sound too good.
The thing is, I'm living in Henderson Hall right now, but I'm wondering if I could move to a different residential hall. I mean, I want to move immediately, if possible.
That's kind of an unorthodox request. Not many students request to be moved in the middle of a term. And we usually don't consider any accommodation transfers until the beginning of a new semester, apart from compelling cases.
What do you mean by compelling cases?
It just means that you have to have a really strong reason why you need to move immediately. Is there anything that makes your request to move more urgent?
Well, it's really noisy. I can't study in my room, so I'm finding it extremely frustrating if I want to read or write an essay or something.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that's just such a common complaint. I mean, we hear it all the time here at the accommodation office. And to be honest, that's why the library is open 24 hours. We recommend that students study there.
I see where you're going with this. It's just that Henderson Hall is quite far from the library, so I have to carry my laptop and all the books there, and of course then I have to carry them back to my room again, which is very tiring.
Yes, but the library has a computer lab for students, so you wouldn't necessarily have to take your laptop, would you?
Ah, the library has a computer lab, that's true, but it's usually completely full, and there aren't any free computers available.
Oh, that is a bit tricky.
And of course, it's so distracting in my room with all the loud music.
Have you tried speaking to your resident director about it?
What's a resident director?
That's the person who lives in your hall of residence, and who's in charge of day-to-day activities there, as well as complaints.
Okay, so who's the resident director in charge of Henderson Hall?
Let's have a look on my list. Let's see. Here it is. It's John Marshall. I'm surprised you weren't introduced to him during your student orientation.
That's my fault, I'm afraid. I missed orientation because I arrived on campus late, so we were never introduced.
Okay, well, that certainly clears up the mystery. I'd suggest that you have a talk with John. I mean, most halls of residence have set up study hours, so if students don't keep the noise down during the quiet times that have been demarcated for studying, then the resident director can give the offending students 3 verbal warnings.
Yeah, well, I don't want the people that I live with to know that I've complained about them.
No problem. It's a completely anonymous, confidential process.
That's good to know. But I mean, you're just talking about verbal warnings. What happens if the noisy students just keep ignoring the RD's warnings?
If they don't heed the warnings, then the RD files a formal complaint with us here at the accommodation office. And finally, we have the authority to remove the students.
Okay, I'll have to talk with John to get the ball rolling. Thanks so much for your help.
That is the end of Section 2. Section 3.
This afternoon, we'll be looking at the function of the human brain. We will also be talking about the way the function, as well as the dysfunction of the human brain, is measured. Now, as you may know, it was in 1929 that electrical activity in the human brain was first discovered. Hans Berger, the German psychiatrist who made the discovery, was despondent to find out, though, that his research was quickly dismissed by many other scientists. The work of Berger was confirmed 3 years later, in 1932, when Edgar Adrian, a Briton, clearly demonstrated that the brain, like the heart, is profuse in its electrical activity. Because of Adrian's work, we know that the electrical impulses in the brain, called brain waves, are a mixture of 4 different frequencies. Here I should say first of all that by frequency, we're referring to the number of electrical impulses that occur in the brain per second. Now, in order to measure brain activity and function, there are various types of equipment which can perform various types of tests. For instance, we have traditionally used CAT and PET scans for this purpose. Okay, can anybody elucidate between CAT and PET scans?
Well, I'll take a stab at it. If I recall correctly, the PET scan works by means of an inert radioactive substance given to a patient, and this allows the doctor to observe the movement of the substance through the brain. As far as the CAT scan, well, they're like an X-ray of the brain, which is then displayed on a computer screen.
Yes, that's right. Now, can anybody talk about the differences between the appearances of CAT and PET scans?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I should have talked about that, too. The PET scan shows up as one image, and that image will have different colors. And each one of the colors displays the pattern of the brain activity. With the CAT scan, that's a cross-section. So, unlike the PET scan, it can be viewed from different angles or positions. And, of course, as far as patients are concerned, the cat is far less invasive because they don't need to ingest a radioactive substance.
Great. In addition to cat and PET scan, we now have an MRI scan, which, as you know, works according to the principles of magnetism. The MRI is perhaps the most indispensable of all the various scans due to its ability to map the brain in three dimensions.
That is the end of Section 3. Section 4.
Skyscrapers vary around the world from city to city, depending on local climate, conditions, and of course terrain. This is especially true in the world's most heavily populated cities. No recent construction project exemplifies this more clearly than the building of the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank Corporation in Hong Kong. So in today's lecture, we're going to have a look at the construction of this particular high-rise building. First of all, it is interesting to note that a very significant proportion of the structure was prefabricated. In other words, the building was designed so that it had many pre-built parts that were not constructed on site. This prefabrication made the project a truly international effort. The windows were manufactured in Austria, the exterior walls were fabricated in the United States, the toilets and air conditioning were made in Japan, and many of the other components came from Germany. The prefabrication also had the advantage of making the construction more efficient, as well as minimizing the intrusion and inconvenience to a great many people who continue to work in other buildings near the site. The HSBC building consists of 47 stories, which is an immense contrast to the 20-story buildings in its vicinity. In fact, the previous buildings constructed on the site were limited by the soft and often waterlogged ground in the surrounding area. For this reason, the disruption of the groundwater supply had to be carefully pondered prior to construction of the HSBC headquarters to ensure that subsidence and potentially collapse of the structure could be averted. Next, the concrete lower floor of the building was constructed so that work above ground could commence. During the next phase of construction, 8 giant steel columns, which weighed more than 1,000 tons, were erected to support the walls of the structure. In order to support the weight of the building, deep wells were sunk into the bedrock below the building and then filled with concrete to anchor each of the steel columns. To provide further support, steel beams stretch across the 8 columns at 5 levels of the structure. Each of these steel beams comprises twin rectangular frames that are, in fact, 2 stories high. Each steel beam also has hangers, which are used to support the floors. Specially designed cranes then lifted the prefabricated elements of the building into place. Most of the bank's exterior walls are taken up by large panes of window glass. The rest of the building is covered in aluminium panels. The external walls are also prefabricated in an aluminium finish that matched the rest of the building. So when the external walls were finally lifted in position, they matched seamlessly with the rest of the building.
That is the end of Section 4. That is the end of IELTS Listening Practice Test 1.